All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, July 23rd, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everybody. It is 58 degrees and partly cloudy here in upstate New York. A little bit chilly this morning for late July, but I'm not complaining. Absolutely am not envying anyone in the 100 degree temperatures. So where did we leave off yesterday? We took a look at some of the back doors that the government has been accessing and how nothing that we do is secure in the internet. We took a pretty close look at Hacking Team, who they were, who was using their software, General Keith Alexander and the different divisions of the military that have been doing cyber patrol. The day before, we even looked at some new laws coming for robotics, as well as robo-ethics and how we're going to define ethics before it's too late with artificial technology. Where I'd like to continue is taking a look at some of the things that are going on in regards to DARPA. I mean, we've talked about DARPA so many times before. We know that DARPA is the root of the lizards that have been working on usurping humanity and making everything biological, synthetic, merging man with the machine to be human 2.0. This is pretty interesting. DARPA Dan, there was a 60 Minutes interview back, probably about a year or two ago, but I thought that this would be a great place to start today. I have a lot I want to get to, but I think that this will kind of outlay how this has been spun to the public, titled DARPA, Nobody is Safe on the Internet.
The recent cyber invasions of health insurer Anthem, Sony Studios, and the military's Twitter and YouTube accounts highlight how hacking has morphed from a commercial nuisance to a matter of national security.
Ding, ding. Now, you know, I've talked about that before. Like I even said the other day, I've been in technology my entire adult life. And I got to tell you, back in the day, I mean, there were hacks, but it wasn't any big organized, massive hack attack at any large entities, let's say. I mean, you had little backdoor hackings here and there and vulnerabilities that were being taken advantage of. Then you had a lot of the black hat hackers, especially over in some of the Slavic states. After the Iron Curtain came down, you started having lots of cybercrime that came out of the Eastern Bloc. Then, you know, we've seen now recently over the last few years after they declared the internet war field, you know, where we're going to declare war and a hacking. I think Obama had even said that back a few years ago, that somebody hacking into your systems from another country into a government entity could be considered a declaration of war. So all of a sudden we had Keith Alexander then morph all of those new different departments within the military into cyber patrol centers where we would be able to fight on the battlefield of cyber warfare. And one other thing, remember, before Janet Napolitano left office, she had also declared that our infrastructure was completely insecure for utilities, especially nuclear power plants, the electrical grid. And don't anyone be surprised if, you know, something gets taken down. I mean, they've just been setting up all these dominoes to make it so perfect. This plan is just so amazingly perfect as to how they're working this. So anyway, here's a 60 Minutes interview. So she had mentioned some hack attacks from when the quote-unquote global attack on large targets began a few years ago. And she was talking about Anthem, the health insurance provider. What else did she say? I don't know. It's early, guys. I've been recording this show at 5 o'clock in the morning to try and keep up with things. So, but this is kind of setting the stage for everything that's happened now. And she talks about this DARPA Dan, who's in charge of DARPA's whole end of cyber patrol.
The man the Department of Defense has tasked with inventing technology to wage this new internet war is Dan Kaufman. He heads the Software Innovation Division of DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, in charge of maintaining our military technological superiority. It makes sense that DARPA is working on this. After all, it invented the internet.
After all.
Kaufman is an unexpected choice He's not a general or a scientist or engineer. He's a video gamer. Call him DARPA Dan.
Ding, ding.
And he says it's only right that the agency that brought us the internet find a way to secure it.
And he's a video gamer. I mean, we've talked about this whole connection to video games and the machine being sucked into this digital reality and eventually being merged with the digital reality as synthetic overtakes biological life on this planet.
How common are attacks, cyber attacks against the U.S. military?
It's common.
A lot.
Oh, yeah.
Every day?
Every day.
Dan Kochman has been monitoring the rising cyber threat for 6 years as the head of DARPA's Information Innovation Office in Arlington, Virginia.
The number of attacks is dramatically increasing. The sophistication of the attacks is increasing. So my job is not to wait for something catastrophic to happen and then say, oh, goodness, we should do something. My job is to say, I see this trend line going. I want to be way ahead of this line.
And, you know, right at the very beginning of this video, she had even said, and I should have pointed it out when she said it, that it has gone from the fringes, hacking, that is, it's gone from the fringes to a matter of national security. That is the absolute reason to bring down the net on everything and surveil us at a cellular level.
You consider dealing with cyber war your main mission?
No, I don't. It's not my main mission, but it's about half my office. So
half your office is dealing with this.
It's absolutely, both offense and defense.
One from DARPA.
One of their defensive inventions is this ambitious prototype that when in operation, we'll be able to scan the military's global computer network and zero in on any machine that may have been hacked.
Now, this is using this surface computing coffee table tank thing. Let me just back up 1 second. They gave the name of the software in the video. It's called Planks. P-L-A-N-X.
Absolutely. Both offense and defense.
One of their defensive inventions is this ambitious prototype that, when in operation, will be able to scan the military's global computer network and zero in on any machine that may have been hacked.
Yellow nodes are the ones that are running our software, and blue are the ones it's interrogating or asking.
Now, here's what's interesting. Yes, this Planks will be able to scan the entire Department of Defense network and be able to tell which ones have been hacked. Or, here's some decoding going on. Scan all of your insurgent, quote-unquote, insurgent belligerent targets out there on the grand network called the Internet, or that pesky Internet, and be able to have a map that shows which computers out there that they've set as targets have still backdoor compromises that allows them to get in and monitor. Yes, yes, yes. Oh, how convenient.
Within seconds, the compromised computers pop up as red dots. And the idea is that these computers have been hacked.
Yes.
And someone has control of them and is taking secret information away from the military.
Exactly right.
Or, these are all the computers that are actively being monitored by our Cyber Patrol Center. Ha 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 ha.
And before, as you saw, it would be completely invisible to us, because you're hiding among tens of thousands of computers around the world. Now, you and I can see this very quickly, and we know exactly what's going
on. Stunning, and in just a couple of minutes.
Yes.
Or less, even.
Wow, global computer monitoring in just a couple of minutes, all on touchscreen tabletops.
Other than that, from here, you could absolutely start. I could say, let's shut that computer down. Let's quarantine that computer off.
Yes, let's, oh, keywords, ding, ding. You know, what really gets me about all of this is how far we have come. And DARPA is the silent evil in all of this game.
If it looks like a video game, that's not entirely an accident. Before DARPA, Kochman made a fortune running several cutting-edge video game companies.
Ding! And, you know, this whole dumb-end user-friendly interface that I was talking about yesterday, I believe, where that's the way to make software ubiquitous, that's the way to roll out high-end technological capabilities to the dumbed-down users of that software. In this case, this is going to be being able to put people with no real technical ability, like this guy who was a video gamer who made millions of dollars on a few software packages that he put out there, but he was able to take the dumb end user friendly and then make those controls and those capabilities do some very advanced technical things like, oh, I don't know, remotely shut down a computer, quarantine it, do whatever we want.
His only military experience is make-believe.
Merging between the digital and the reality.
He helped invent the popular war game series Medal of Honor.
Of course he did. Now that's something else. You know, how many times have I talked about now 20 years ago seeing the very first Department of Defense game get skewed up on a point-of-sale system for a large global distributor? I mean, and this was right at the perfect moment that any of those children that were coming up through that point in time were going to be exposed to this video game. It was new, it was novel, it was first person, it was doing aviation flying with very, very realistic maps down below, and we trained an entire generation of remote drone pilots. Well, now listen to this.
And then 9/11 happened. And it shocked.
Of course it did. 9/11 happened. That was when Pandora's box got opened.
To my soul. And I thought, I've lived incredibly well off this country. And I want to give something back, but I have no idea how to work for the government. I mean, I had never thought about it. I'd never been to Washington, D.C. And I did what all nerds do. I went to Barnes & Noble. And I got a big book. It said Government Jobs. It was a big book. And I thumbed through it. And I said, I will find something and I will donate some time. And I decided I would hunt serial killers. So I cold called the FBI. I'm sure I'm still on a list somewhere. And I said, you don't know me, but I want to do this. And they told me I was too old.
38 at the time. He missed the cutoff age for agents by 1 year. But eventually, his resume got noticed by the Department of Defense, that saw an advantage to bringing in someone familiar with the language and hardware of video games.
Oh.
Like this virtual reality Oculus Rift headgear.
There you go. I mentioned that yesterday as well. I couldn't remember what it was called. But yes, the Oculus Rift and how they are now surveilling future quote-unquote soldiers or future employees through their ability to navigate these new video games. Really freaky. This guy cold called the FBI looking to get a job. This is messed up.
Experimenting with.
So you're just using joysticks. You're just doing what any kid playing a video game would be doing. Right?
That's exactly right, except moving them into the world of actual science and real cyber defense.
There you go.
Now DARPA Dan has top secret clearance, though his department looks like an arcade. He has a team of 25 brainiacs and a budget of $500 million.
Oh my God, he has a budget of $500 million with a B dollars.
Year. Is everybody given a lot of freedom to pursue what they're interested in?
Yes, you're given tremendous freedom. The only constraints on you are, one, it has to do something to help national security, so make the world a better, safer, more secure place.
So you're working for the military?
Absolutely. Okay. I'm part of the Department of Defense. And two, we don't do incremental improvement. So the idea is it has to be something really revolutionary.
This man is working on artificial intelligence software that would detect a hacker attack in real time and plug it in milliseconds with no humans involved.
Wow.
If such technology had been available to Sony, that breach from North Korea could have been plugged right as it happened.
Now, you know, what's interesting about what she was just mentioning is this artificial intelligence that will plug a hole as it is detected. If you remember me talking about that the other day, I had mentioned that as an RFP, a request for proposal that I had read, where this is like the new Generation 3 former antivirus Day Zero intrusion detection software. This is putting artificial intelligence on a sentry. And like I said yesterday, Skynet. Yes, it is the very beginnings of Skynet and this sentry patrol without human intervention, autonomous software.
When DARPA first invented the internet 50 years ago, They just didn't imagine hacking would become such a problem.
Can the internet be fixed? Or do we just have to throw this one out and build a whole new internet?
Ding, ding, there we go. I mentioned that the other day, too, with this whole new Internet of Things. This is a game changer. This is going to make all new protocols, all new APIs, all new programming languages. We're going to toss the old one out and create a new one.
From scratch, with security built in.
I don't think the Internet is broken. I think the things we put on the Internet are broken. What we're doing is we're putting a lot of devices on it that are unsecure.
And like so, what? Give me an example.
Pretty much everything.
Now, you can control everything in your house with a smartphone.
Our devices are increasingly connected online in what's called the IoT, the Internet of Things.
Unlock a garage side door.
Affirmative. Unlocking garage side door.
Today, all the devices that are on the Internet of Things, are fundamentally insecure. There's no real security going on.
Always on, connected home.
So connected homes could be hacked and taken over.
What is the house temperature?
There are already horror stories of this happening to baby monitors and smart kitchen appliances.
Smart kitchen appliance hacking.
So if somebody got into my refrigerator through the internet, then they would be able to get into everything. Right?
Yeah, that's the fear, right? So the fear is as everything becomes networked, right? So first, maybe they can mess with the refrigerator. You think, well, that's bad. It's not that horrible. Your milk will go bad. Or it's sort of prankish, right?
Yeah, prankish.
But that refrigerator, of course, as everything becomes networked, well, maybe that also happens to talk to your garage door.
Or even to your car itself.
Ding, ding, to the car. We're going to look at that. There actually was a very recent hacking of a Jeep Cherokee, I believe. But we also are going to take a look at the DARPA director back a few years ago talking about car hacking as well.
How many computers do you think is in a car like this?
Somewhere between 30 and 50.
Kathleen Fisher, a DARPA veteran, says a modern car is really a computer on wheels. You've seen the ads of your GPS or smartphone linked to the dashboard. But this way, your car could be hacked and taken over remotely.
There we go.
They showed us.
Might look at the dashboard there.
What am I looking at?
Oh, steering wheel. Ready, Leslie. All right.
This is a regular new car. The masking tape is only there because we agreed to obscure its make and model.
We'll give them the illusion they control the car for now.
We'll give them the illusion that they control the car for now. Guys, this is some massively scary stuff.
Been working on this for 5 years with multiple research teams.
You want to hit the fluids?
Oh my gosh.
There we go.
There we go.
What's that? the windshield wiper fluid. No, wait, so this is something that a hacker had...
That's right, a hacker. Like, obviously, you didn't turn on the windshield
wiper. I did nothing.
By the way, the passenger that the 60 Minutes lady has in the car is that director of DARPA, that Kathleen, I don't remember what they said her last name is, but Kathleen Fisher, that was her name. And they're showing the car, like, literally being hacked.
Using a laptop, the hacker dialed the car's emergency communication system and transmitted a series of tones that flooded it with data. As the car's computer tried sorting it out, the hacker inserted an attack that reprogrammed the software, gaining total remote control.
Total remote control of your vehicle, people. My suggestion is anyone who needs a new car, buy a used one. I don't know, you could do some searches online to find out which cars don't have as many computer parts as others. But I think it's we're pretty screwed. And when you look at, we looked the other day at the first injury accident with the Google self-driving car. You know that those are coming. Those self-driving cars are going to be here before we know it. A lot of the different manufacturers are working on their own models now. In the next few years, you're not going to have that bastion of freedom. They're already putting in acceleration limiters so the car itself can communicate with a sensor to determine what the set speed limit is, and if you go over that speed limit, the car throttles back the engine so you can't.
Oh my god. Doing that, they could control the gas, the acceleration, they
That's
could
right.
control the braking.
That's right.
and they could do this.
Oh, my God, they can accelerate or they can break. If you remember the whole Michael Hastings story after he was getting ready to publish that article, and I don't remember even who he was exposing, but I know it was a pretty high-profile expose he was going to do, and then his car smashed into a telephone pole, accelerating at high speed with, you know, some mysterious circumstances through an intersection.
From anywhere in the world.
When they come out and they are facing straight there, like away from us, just saying, we'll just slam on the brake.
Yeah, sure.
Oh.
And the car stops.
She's stuck dead.
Yep.
Oh, my God. That was terrifying, actually.
So now let's make another loop around.
Okay. So just try, stop at the cones here.
She thinks she's going to be able to stop right at those cones. Let's make sure that she can't, and she's going to drive right through them. All right. Complete control of that brake.
Oh, my God. This is so frightening, driving right through it.
No.
She's stepping on the brakes, and the car is just going. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. I can't operate the brakes at all. Oh, my word. That is...
Now, is this showing us that we should be afraid? Like, I can't believe they did this expose in 60 Minutes. And I saw an article when I was trying to find this video this morning from Forbes that it said, oh, the 60 Minutes DARPA remote control car was over-exaggerated. Yeah, right. I mean, they're showing you, this is the head of their cyber war division for DARPA and a DARPA director in the car with the 60 Minutes lady showing you exactly how they can completely take control of your vehicle.
It's frightening. While there's no known case of a car hacked this way, security cameras have shown cars burglarized by hackers unlocking doors.
And we saw these videos.
You can find software to do that online for $25. All this has alarmed Senator Ed Markey. Tomorrow, he's releasing a scathing report revealing that nearly all new cars can be hacked.
Wow, we should find that. I don't remember that, but it says from the office of Ed Markey, tracking and hacking, security and privacy gaps put American drivers at risk. We should try and find that and read through it.
But that only 2 out of 16 car makers can diagnose or respond to an infiltration in real time.
Great.
And so what the theft program does is it unlocks the car's doors.
DARPA researchers got involved in hacking cars and the Internet of Things.
Are you really trying to hack into it?
Yes, I am.
In an effort to invent unhackable code from military drones.
And is your goal to do it for drones and then have it apply to cars and my refrigerator and things like that?
Exactly.
Oh, my God. They're using unhackable code from drones, military drones, and then they're going to apply. So this is this new protocol or software, whatever I've been talking about. So from military drones, they're going to apply it then to your car and to your, Internet Things enchanted refrigerator.
Right. I think that's when DARPA is at its very best. We're solving a specific problem for the military. I want to make sure their systems are safe, but I would like everything to be safe.
And now DARPA Dan is trying to reinvent search engines.
Okay.
Traffickers who sell weapons or young girls online remain largely hidden from authorities. Kaufman and his team set out to remedy that. First, they studied the time-consuming way law enforcement agents bust sex trafficking networks by clicking on one sex ad or link at a time on commercial search engines.
And we watched, and they did what you think. You know, they put an address of a massage parlor or something, and then they'd write it down on a yellow sticky, and then they'd try to build it, and each to each. And we looked at that, and we said there has to be a better way.
Especially considering that Google and Bing don't penetrate the dark web.
Oh!
Most illegal goods are advertised and sold.
The dark web. We've talked about this before as well, and how people seem to think that Tor is keeping them safe, but it isn't. Wait till you hear this.
So DARPA invented Memex.
Memex!
With which you can click just one button, and all the hidden information scattered deep in the web about an illicit activity is pulled together and revealed.
So you're building the network.
Building the network. That's right.
Chris White, who invented Memex, showed us how, in the case of sex trafficking, it can comb through all the sex ads online, over 60 million, and identify hundreds of names and numbers that link together
and make up an entire trafficking ring.
Help. Names and numbers, people. And I mean, I know this is about sex trafficking, but they could apply it to anything.
How long did it take Memex to figure this out?
Instantaneously.
DARPA's inventions can take over a decade before they're transplanted from the military into the broader market, but not in this case.
Oh. We started using Memex about a year ago, in January of 2014.
Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance Jr. says New York is one of several cities already deploying Memex to find sex traffickers.
And I told you guys yesterday about New York City. New York City Police Department, NYPD, is in with the FBI as well as their Israeli division and Israeli security. So New York, Seattle also with the Microsoft Cyber Patrol Center, those are two hubs of the serpents, the snake's den.
We have 20 open investigations in which we are using the Memex tools and 8 open indictments.
Memex is so effective, the White House has asked to see if it could be used to monitor ISIS.
Oh, of course. ISIS under every bed, in every parent's basement playing video games. Guys, that pesky internet is going to be usurped here. I mean, it already is. We just don't know it yet, but I'm telling you, DARPA has their finger on the pulse, and for anything that you think you're getting away with, you're not.
A downside is that Memex could also invade our privacy.
Oh, yes.
So what do? You throw this out there, and it can do many good things, but there's the dark side.
There's always the dark side. It's something we wrestle with tremendously. Our job is, A, to sort of say, look, this is what it is. Let's decide. How do we want to use it? And then, two,
let's use it until we get caught like the NSA.
Two, when some of the new programs we're working on just beginning now, are there ways that I can get in here and still protect your privacy?
How much of your time is spent inventing things for the NSA?
Almost none, actually.
Because a lot of this stuff could be used by them.
Yes.
He can't control how his inventions will be used. These aren't video games, after all.
Right,
when he comes to beating that...
He can't control how his inventions are going to be used. So this is great. Let's create Skynet, the artificial intelligence that's the sentry to protect everything from drone technology brought down to the household, to your car, and to your refrigerator. But we can't control how it's going to be used.
Hackers out there, Dan Kaufman has total confidence.
Are you worried at all that by showing us all the new wowie-do things you're working on, that you're going to give car thieves an idea, or you're going to give someone who wants to break into my refrigerator an idea, or a terrorist an idea?
I think they have lots of ideas on their own. What I want them to know is that there's somebody smart on the other side who's going to make that way harder. I want to make them think twice.
Ding, 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 ding. He wants to make them think twice. And exactly that's what I'm doing. I'm thinking twice. What's interesting is the title of that piece was DARPA, Nobody is Safe on the Internet. And like I said, that's what we've been talking about here all this week, is just how it is all an illusion. I wanted to hit a story that I found last night. Hackers take control of new Jeep Cherokee, sparking update. It says, driving a Jeep today? Well, don't worry about it. Don't worry about a thing. Not to worry, but unless the car's been updated in the last week, there is probably a vulnerability or two in the vehicle, as there are in as many as 417,000 Chrysler automobiles which could be abused by hackers sitting in front of a laptop anywhere on the planet. Hey, guess what? That is exactly the same words they just used in that DARPA clip. According to researchers Chris Balasek of IOActive and Charlie Miller, a former NSA staffer, oh, how convenient, there are issues in the Uconnect system that provides the connected infotainment and other internet-powered systems in Fiat Chrysler automobiles. How interesting is that about the infotainment? Because if you remember back a few months ago, there was a hacker guy that was getting on a plane, and he had tweeted something before he had gotten on the plane about how he was able to hack the plane and take control of it, though he didn't do anything bad, but he was just making a point that airlines were insecure, and he hacked in through the infotainment system into the airline. And, of course, the airline denied it and said the two systems are not connected, but now they were able to do it in cars as well. It says, these gentlemen were able to create attacks that could connect to that system, which was the infotainment system, and jump over to a chip powering the in-vehicle entertainment and then rewrite the firmware on that little piece of hardware. From there, their exploit code could send commands across the car because went just like any computer system. And if you remember, too, we saw a story a while back where car companies in the future, and they were already working on it, were looking at being able to use copyright to prevent you from fixing and working on your newer vehicles. And how they were getting around that is that the car itself was being redesignated, and even the DARPA lady said that. She had mentioned that she's like, look, your car is just a big computer. And yes, they're looking at redesignating vehicles as mobile computing devices. Ergo, the software that makes them run is copyrighted by the manufacturer, which would be the car company or whoever wrote the software for them and bundled it as an OEM, which then would allow them to do digital copyrights management. It says, anyway, from there, their code exploit could send commands across the car, from killing the brakes to shutting off the engine and playing with the steering, as shown in a video from Wired magazine. It is a total car compromise. So look, here's another. I mean, that was already 2 years ago, the DARPA one. Now Wired is doing one where they could take over a Jeep Cherokee. Anyway, back to the story. Pretty terrifying stuff, and another example of a remote attack on a vehicle which has been demonstrated before and will continue to be shown if car manufacturers continue to create insecure networks on wheels. Now, as we heard in that DARPA clip as well, they had said only two manufacturers had any way to respond to real-time hacks. Miller and Vilisek have been tooting their own horns about vehicular insecurities for the last 2 years, while Senator Ed Markey, here we go again, we got to look up his report, issued a report in February slamming manufacturers' responses to the issue. At the same time, vehicle owners might want the right to be able to hack their own cars to make modifications, but automotive manufacturers, in particular GM, want to stop that practice. In both departments, they are letting the customers down, and that's I wanted to click. Oh yeah, DCMA war between car manufacturers and end users, and that's exactly what I've been talking about, them making your car a quote-unquote mobile computing device and utilizing copyright laws to stop you from fixing them or working on them. Like, how insane is that? So your car, just one day out of the blue, became a mobile computing device. And I mean, this has been happening for a long time. It's why I still love classic cars, because they don't have any computers in them. But yes, car hackers hit LA to fight DCMA and automotive lobbyists. This story is out of May 20th, 2015, Forbes. Liam O'Brien has been tinkering with his Tesla over recent months, and he's exploring the onboard network of his family Model S, keeping other enthusiasts updated with posts on the Instructables website. He was inspired to start digging into his Tesla, as it seemed people were, quote, too afraid to share what they learned, fearing the wrath of the Tesla legal team, despite the fact that these people bought and owned the cars in question. Think about it. Would someone be as afraid to reverse engineer a toaster? Probably not. His work has attracted plenty of interest. An aftermarket parts maker and a Toyota subsidiary have been in touch, both keen to get more info. But those anxious Tesla owners were right to worry about legal repercussions for making alterations to their automobiles, even if Elon Musk's firm appears to be one of the more relaxed manufacturers. A war is brewing, and battles are taking place this week in L.A. and next week in Washington, D.C., where car hackers and security pros are fighting one of the laws threatening their tinkering, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, or more affectionately known, the DCMA. No, DMCA. They will give evidence to the U.S. Copyright Office going up against a giant automotive firms, including General Motors and the Auto Alliance trade body that includes almost every major car maker minus Tesla, who don't want any unauthorized parties to mess with their products. And they are debating an exemption, a proposed Class 21 to the DMCA that would allow the legal owner of the car to bypass security protections, i.e. hack, to make changes if they wanted. Craig Smith, founder of the Open Garages Car Security Organization, oh my God, who knew we had one of those, is one of those who gave evidence in L.A. Like others on the side of car modifiers, he believes the DMCA isn't fit for purpose in the current environment where vehicles run almost entirely on software. In order to tinker and make modifications on a modern vehicle, the inventor must reverse engineer the network packets and firmware of the vehicle in order to make safe modifications. Back when there was limited or no code inside of vehicles, anyone could alter their car without fear of lawyers knocking, he noted, adding that adjustments are often necessary for anyone wanting to make their car unique or just safer. Noted car security expert Charlie Miller, who plans to show off a remote exploitation on a vehicle at the DEF CON Hacker Conference this summer, and this is the one we just read about, was also on hand to argue for the exemption. In a pastebin post outlining his problems with DMCA, he said vehicles currently being produced are not safe from remote exploitation, and this scares me, but what really scares me are laws that won't allow me to look at the code that my automobile runs to determine whether it is safe, look for vulnerabilities, or see how it is designed around safety, or even build a compatible device to add safety features. Hiding away the safety critical code from observation will not solve the problem, and we cannot wait for benevolent manufacturers to do the right thing and produce safe cars. They need help, and the DMCA prevents people like me from helping them. I know many researchers won't participate in this field due to the legal murkiness around car security research. Despite all of these complaints, most car manufacturers are keen to block this exemption. General Motors is leading the charge in its comments supporting a denial of Class 21, which would allow hackers to probe security vulnerabilities. The automotive firm said it would likely have, quote, a substantial adverse impact on users, unquote. The proposed exemption could introduce safety and security issues. See, this is what I was saying, that this was their argument, as well as facilitate violation of various laws designed to specifically regulate the modern car, including emissions, fuel economy, and vehicle safety regulations, the document read. Amongst its many other qualms, GM also argued that car owners don't, in fact, own the software on their vehicles. The record demonstrates that a vehicle owner does not own a copy of the relevant computer programs in the vehicle. Ding, 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 ding. How long is it going to be before we find out that this whole usurpation toward the synthetic life form, toward integrating technology into our human bodies and technology into our crops, right? All this genetic modification that's going on. How long is it going to be before the synthetic crossover to programming genes becomes a copyright software issue? We've already been looking at them modifying DNA and some of these mad science gone mad experiments in genetics, creation of two new amino acids that they've been able to insert into a DNA strand, so they now have CATG, X, and Y. How long is it going to be before we find out that that's replicated in different regions of our environment, maybe even within our own bodies, through food we ingested, or something in the air that we breathed, or some sort of injection that we received, or some sort of additive in our food? That we have this now in our body. How long is it going to be before our quote-unquote operating system, our DNA, our programmable code, become somebody else's DMCA copyright. I mean, I'm telling you people, this whole crazy web that we're untangling here has some very, very, very scary implications. All right, I'm going to jump off of this whole car take that we've been on, and I want to get back to some of the robotics, merging man and machine, the coming of artificial intelligence, the Internet of Things, enchanted objects, intelligent smart homes, remote control devices, and some of the legal challenges, whether it be for law for Internet, law for robotics, but also some of the ethics behind it. There was a video that came out of RT yesterday. Pigmind posted this, and it was titled, Robots May Claim Legal Rights as Humans. Oh, no!
We've all heard the warnings. Robots are coming to take your job or drive your car. But may they also demand human rights? Well, one man, Ryan Kahlo, a professor of law at the University of Washington, has posed the question, is the law ready to handle the rise of robots and artificial intelligence? I spoke to him earlier and started by asking him if he thought we're even close to seeing machines so advanced.
Well, let me just say that actually I don't think we're anywhere near a place where robots will gain consciousness or demand rights. To convince yourself that we're not as far along as many believe in robotics, take a look at the videos from this year's DARPA Grand Challenge in California. And what you see is the most sophisticated humanoid robots in the world struggling to do in an hour what it takes my toddler to do in 5 minutes.
Now, you know, here's the thing. When we look at robotics, and, I mean, they're putting on a great face showing, you know, he's exactly right, the DARPA Challenge, they're kind of tripping over each other, and there were some comedic clips that came out of that with this one big clunky robot tripping out of a vehicle and falling on the ground. But, you know, what we tend to forget, and we did a whole bunch of shows on this, you know, I mention all the time, go out to the Before the First Cup playlist archives out on YouTube, youtube.com/UCYTV, and then find the playlist called Before the First Cup. Scroll back, and you'll see we did a whole bunch of stories on Kurzweil, nanotechnology. I don't remember that other scientist. He was the MIT father of nanotechnology. If I remember it, I'll blurt it out. But you have to realize that our technology and our capability to create self-aware systems, which we saw yesterday. We did a story. The very first computer has become self-aware through a test. Okay, it's coming. They are working on artificial intelligence and self-replication at a nanoscale level all across the globe. So don't let some big clunky robot who maybe hasn't gotten all of his faculties together make you believe this guy that we're not as far as it's come. Because don't forget, they're already doing amazing things with brain implants, mind control over body parts, growing body parts in petri dishes. I saw that they just replicated heart cells that actually beat some sort of synthetic blood. And the other day we had also looked at a story of working on DARPA. It was originally a DARPA project, working on a full body on a chip. It might not all be happening within our view, and these clunky robots are there for people to point to and go, but look, it still looks like a 1960 science fiction movie. But it's the things we can't see that are extremely advanced. We heard DARPA Dan talking about what they can do already just using software to be able to scan things. It's going to be Skynet, people. The Atlas robots marching in swarms down the road are going to be later. I mean, if you haven't seen any of the Boston Dynamics and DARPA cheetah type or big dog type robots, I mean, they've come pretty far. So just because some of these robotics challenges out of the universities aren't going as well, don't think that they don't have crazier stuff in the lab that's already 20 plus years ahead of us.
So I wasn't saying that we're going to, you know, have consciousness maybe ever. You know, we've been doing artificial intelligence since that term was coined in the 1950s at my alma mater.
This dude is so trying to downplay it all. Like, don't put words in my mouth that, like, I said this, because I didn't. And, you know, this is like 1950s. We've had this term, artificial intelligence. We got some of the smartest guys on the planet that are warning that we are at, like, the cusp of danger right now. Lack of morals, lack of any type of ethical code. Not only for the scientists necessarily that are doing this, even though, you know, some of them, like I said, they think that they're benefiting humanity, just like DARPA Dan seemed like he was really naive in where his creations might end up, but he did say that he, you know, has no control once he sets it free and the genie leaves the bottle. But don't forget, some of the smartest guys, Stephen Hawking, Elon Musk, Billy Gates, you know, have all come out and said AI is going to be a real problem. Danger, Will Robinson.
And today, robots, you know, can usually recognize cats. What I was saying, rather, was that if they ever do achieve consciousness,
yes,
it is going to completely break, you know, today's legal institutions and today's law.
Well, then let's talk about that then, because you seem interested in talking about this kind of in terms of the concept of the law, right? I mean,
yeah, hypothetically speaking, you don't want to put yourself out there that, like, this is something that's coming. Just hypothetically speaking, let's talk.
The media has kind of picked it up as warning robots are going to try and take over, but what you're really talking about here is that you say robots are continuously really blurring the line between machine and man, so you're warning that then hypothetically, of course, they could then demand human rights.
Blending between machine and man, that is the point.
Well, what I'm saying is that robotics presents unique challenges even today and increasingly over time. And part of that has to do with the fact that, yes, it does blur the distinction between a person and an object. And so in a recent law review article, I write that, you know, things like Twitter bots that are out there behaving in ways that are hard to anticipate can cause harm. You know, they can threaten people's lives, as one Twitter bot did, or they can purchase drugs on the internet, as another Twitter bot, as another software bot did. And it's hard to, and you have these victims, or you have these crimes at least, but you don't have a perpetrator because the perpetrator is software. So I take that to its logical extension and I say, look, the law has all kinds of assumptions about how people are. And if you know, if there was something that was conscious and could demand rights that wasn't a person, our law wouldn't be able to apply to it. Mm. And the example I give is this idea of an artificial intelligence saying that it would want to vote. Well, maybe it can vote. I mean, that's certainly a right that we give to people. But what if it can also copy itself? What if it can make copies of itself or merge with other software and make another software instantaneously? Do we then give that other software a vote too? And now just suddenly we have...
We're worried about votes. I mean, what he's saying here is just so extreme. What if it can copy itself, replicate itself, merge with other things, like what, mutate or evolve? I mean, this is some majorly, majorly insane, scary stuff, and we are just so there, staring down the abyss right now.
Software that can replicate itself infinitely, but also vote. What I'm trying to say is not that these things are going to happen, but that our law is not even close to being prepared for it.
Well,
how about, like, the humans are not even prepared for it. How are we going to fight back against the machine once this mesh tightens the noose around the top of the escape hatch, man? We are just so, so in trouble. An EMP, like I said the other day, I think that's the last savior for humanity here.
Kind of just goes back to how, you know, people are always talking about the Constitution and, oh, the founding fathers didn't know that the internet was going to happen or whatever. It's hard to apply some of the existing law templates in this country to the modern age, and they certainly didn't see AI or robots happening. So how can you really even address this legally?
Well, look, I mean, I've argued in a law review article, which I have right here, actually.
And it's the California Law Review. That's the story that we read about the other day, so this must be the dude that wrote the article.
I've argued in this law review article that, you know, we can learn lessons from what happened with the internet. So, you know, 20 years ago, legal scholars like, you know, myself, not me, because I just entered the academy more recently, but other legal scholars have began to look at what kinds of challenges the internet posed for the law. One of them was about jurisdiction. You know, the idea was that, you know, what if some website goes up in California but affects people in Philadelphia? It was very hard for the law to handle that. But over the last 20 years, we've begun to understand how to apply law to the internet. And I think that's going to happen with robotics too. But for now, the law holds a bunch of assumptions that robotics blows up, you know, and they're different from the assumptions that it had with the internet. And so what I'm really excited about is studying how driverless cars, drones, robotic surgery, bots, and lots of other things, what kinds of assumptions does the law have about the world that aren't true anymore, and how are we going to have to change the law probably to adapt to robotics.
Oh no, we're going to have to change the law to adapt to robotics. So what's that? That he mentioned drones, that it's okay to kill American citizens overseas without trial? Oh, maybe.
Not that I don't think we can do it. I just think it's going to be this long process, similar to what we saw with the internet.
Well, drones is certainly a big one when it comes to the law. It's really an angle, a fascinating angle, to think about when looking at robotics and some of the exciting technology that people talk about. You're making really interesting points about the law, so we appreciate you coming on to talk about it. Ryan Callow, law professor at the University of Washington.
So there you have it. So all kinds of issues in the future law, and we're probably going to have to change our law to include robots at some point and the software capabilities that they have. I don't know if I really feel comfortable about robots voting. I mean, I think it'd be pretty simple to conclude that the law only refers to living human organisms, but I guess we'll see. Here's one other story I wanted to get to. How artificial intelligence is changing economic theory. What? Yes, this is out of phys.org, July 17th, 2015. A century of economic theory assumed that, given their available options, humans would always make rational decisions. Economists even had a name for this construct, Homo economicus, the economic man. Have you ever met a human? We're not always the most rational bunch, and more recent economic theory confronts that fact, taking into account the importance of psychology, societal influences, and emotions in our decision making. And damn, humans and their damn emotions, those emotions and chemical neurotransmitter releases in their brains just screw everything up. So anyway, are the theories that are predicated in Homo economicus extinct? David C. Parks, the George F. Colony Professor and Area Dean of Computer Science at Harvard, John Paulson School of Engineering and Applied Sciences, doesn't think so. Humans may not always make rational decisions, but guess what? Well-conceived algorithms, ding, ding, do. In a paper out today in the Journal of Science, Parks and his co-author, Michael Wellman of the University of Michigan, argue that rational models of economics can be applied to artificial intelligence and discuss the future of machina economicus. Guys, this is really frightening because here we have our global economic system is teetering on the brink, and now they are talking about how, well, hey, humans make irrational decisions, but guess what? AI doesn't. They just use the algorithms to make decisions, and I'm considering here, looking at this, going, isn't this going to be the problem, reaction, and ding, ding, solution? Artificial intelligence can take over financial markets. Parks says that the idea of rationality is a shared construct between AI and economics. When we frame questions in AI, we say, quote, what are the objectives, what should be optimized, and what do we know about the world that we're in? The AI economics interface, check this out, has become quite fertile because there is a shared language of utility, probability, and reasoning about others. Take, for example, the revelation principle in economics, which is a theory by which the design of economic institutions, such as the markets, can be restricted to those where it is in the best interest of participants to truthfully reveal their utility functions. Today's internet advertising systems, which are populated by artificial trading agents, are an operational version of this economic theory. Well, I didn't know that that was using artificial trading agents, but I guess so. I guess that they'd be looking at your stats and then trying to determine and your end users, visitors, let's say, and what their search history looks like, trying to determine what the best ads would be to serve, and then how much it's worth based upon that user's, I don't know, purchasability. I don't know what they're using. Says search engines are designing interfaces where advertisers reveal their budget constraints and goals, and these systems then provide the algorithms to fit those needs. You don't see many mechanisms like this in human societies, but we may see them more and more in AI systems. Machina Economicus might better fit the typical economic theories of rational behavior, but we don't believe that the AI will be fully rational or have unbounded abilities to solve problems, thank God. At some point, you hit the intractability limit. Things we know cannot be solved optimally, and at that point, there will be questions about the right way to model deviations from truly rational behavior. Poker is a great example of a complicated reasoning system. A lot of information is missing, and you don't know the cards of the other players. You're uncertain about that card that will be dealt next, and you're reasoning against another reasoning agent. Recently, researchers developed an algorithm that effectively solves heads-up limit Texas Hold'em, and we talked about that briefly. The computer playing the Texas Hold'em game that beat the champion says it used applying game theory from economics. Researchers developed an AI that has attained perfect rationality in this setting and have done so using a great number of general purpose techniques. But this has come about after decades of research and only for a restricted two-player version of poker. Besides poker, what would a rational AI system do better than humans? Well, one of the more complicated things people do is buying and selling property. It's actually really hard to describe to your real estate agent what you're looking for. Your broker may have some ideas, but real feedback only comes when showing you the properties. It is a very inefficient system. AI researchers are developing the idea that an AI would elicit your preferences initially by direct query, and that an AI can show you a comparison between two houses and ask you which one you prefer. So here we go, the virtual reality real estate agent. As you answer, the AI can build a model of your preferences, adaptively eliciting information until you can reason that it knows enough about your preferences that the AI would be able to go out and, if it was very successful, know what house to buy on your behalf. Oh my God, I don't think I'd be ready to hand over 100 G's to an AI to go find me and buy me a house. Everybody have an awesome Thursday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care.